Civico's Phil Henry.
Hey, it's the world famous Phil Henry Show, and welcome. Good evening. We're live from the El Pacifico, as we always is, are. And welcome to our program. We have, of course, our video cast going on our website. This is the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows, well, they sort of wish they could, but they can't. And we're the radio show that the industry is still scratching its, well, I was going to say something private.
Pussy head.
Scratching their head over. Anyway, welcome to the program. Our number 87, well, they may be scratching the other direction, too. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-7445 is our number. We are online at philhenryshow.com, live streaming video of the show right now. Thousands of hours of archived radio over there. If you get a backstage pass, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. We will have later on in the program Dr. Jim Sadler returning with us to discuss his appearance on our show last night. And in an appearance on our show last evening, I sort of called him out on his expertise. He was talking to a man who had called our show who had had a laryngectomy, had his voice box removed, and was speaking to us on the air in that kind of mechanical manner that I'm sure you are familiar with. And we tried to, unfortunately, he was not easy to understand. And so we did some interpreting. And Dr. Sadler took great exception in an email to me today over how I questioned his medical and his expertise and his education. I was very frankly dumbfounded with the way he reacted to this man and some of our questions. So he's asked for some equal time back. We will give that to him. Our number 877-876-PHIL. Now today in the city of Los Angeles, there was another one of these chases, and Don Berman is on the line with us from Channel 19 News. There was a police chase, this time of a tow truck. It was a slow chase. It was some people said it was interesting in that it obeyed all the traffic rules, and there were a lot of jokes having to do with that. Winding through surface streets for over 2 hours, the driver finally pulled over in Glendale and was taken into custody. During the slow-moving chase, the driver obeyed traffic laws and was sometimes caught up in stop-and-go rush hour traffic. Police cruisers maintained a safe distance in their pursuit. Officers used spike strips on four separate instances. You figure if the guy's going slow enough, maybe they could get a spike strip. Now, why are we talking about this? Well, I'm going to get Don Berman on the line here. Because I know, Don, your station, along with several others here in the city of L.A. and all over the country, television stations use a mobile camera in a helicopter.
That's absolutely correct, Phil. And we have used Jay Day, who is our traffic, has been our traffic reporter, has been our actual news reporter, operating out of Mobile 3, which is the actual studio assigned name that we have to the Channel 19 News helicopter. But Jay has been up there reporting on not only traffic, but on some, he was there during the L.A. riots. He was there during the O.J. chase. Jay's been there and has done a great job.
All right. Now, in Phoenix, Arizona, a number of years ago, I was following the news of another chase. And I was absolutely horrified when I was watching the replay of the coverage of this chase in Phoenix. I was horrified when I heard the chopper that was being used by this particular station.
Which if you don't mind me asking, which station?
I don't know. I forgive me, but I do have the tape, and I don't even. I would be reluctant to play it, although we might be able to dig it out. I was horrified to hear this chopper hit another airborne vehicle of some kind, you know, another craft, either was an airplane or a chopper, and it crashed, and you could hear the men inside this helicopter in great distress. You heard, in fact, I could hear screaming. They pulled the audio down.
Yes.
And it was horrible. And when I go back to thinking about that, I remember how angry I was at the time, because I felt that these guys that are in these helicopters are doing a very dangerous job.
Phil, there is no question, at all, that the men and the women that fly, and we've got audio, I can, you think of the Phoenix crash, and I know the one you're talking about, there is audio of some horrible instances of on-air crashes where you do hear the distress of the people inside the craft. There was one in New York, back in the 80s, where there was, I believe, a female reporter at that time as the helicopter or airplane, I forget which, was crashing, and they stayed on the air as long as they could. There were a great many of these, and the work that is done by the people in our airborne units, covering news, covering these chases, it's I can't say enough for these people.
And here's what I'm getting at. They're risking their lives. These people are up there in the air, and they're risking their lives because if there's a chase like there was one today, which had everybody talking, and perhaps it was carried nationally, I don't know.
I think at some point CNN and Fox both broke in for it.
Okay, so here's this ridiculous thing, this idiot in a tow truck. So now all the TV stations scramble their choppers out there. And now you have the sky filled with choppers and aircraft of every stripe. And you've got a situation up there where these guys are, at risk.
Absolutely.
So my question is this. Is it worth it for a car chase? A guy that, some clown that didn't take his meds and he's running through the streets of any given city and the cops are following this guy. And so every TV station, because it's a ratings pop, get their choppers up in the air. And now you got, I don't know how many pilots looking out the window, trying to avoid smacking into somebody while they're also trying to maintain some sort of camera contact with this thing. Or you have some guy that held up a liquor store, or you might have had a guy.
Well, I mean, and he may be a murder suspect.
Well, all right, if it's a murder suspect, but how many of those are really that serious? Most of these things are like this guy today. What the hell was his problem?
Well, this was a... Jenny, what is the story with the police responded to? It was a traffic collision, and the tow truck driver was at the scene. There was an altercation between the police officers and the driver, and they said the man jumped into his truck and fled, and the police began to... chase him. Now, the tow truck belongs to Portola...
No, wait. They had an altercation?
They had an altercation with this guy at the corner of Magnolia Boulevard and Woodman and Sherman Oaks.
Okay, I know exactly where that is.
All right. And the police responded. The tow truck driver was there. And suddenly there was some kind of... I don't know whether the police asked him for identification, which he felt might make him vulnerable to arrest, because I don't know. Did he have a warrant out? The truck belongs to Portola Towing Company, which is based in Lake Forest in Orange County.
And in Orange County?
Yes.
And they're all the way up in the... They're up at Woodman and Magnolia?
Well, I don't know if, for instance, this was an automobile that was from... the accident was from Orange County, and maybe he was a tow truck for the dealer or for... I don't know. They might want... Maybe the owner of the car wanted to be towed back to Orange County.
Well, whatever, but I mean, this cat wound up taking these cats on a pretty ridiculous chase. Can you imagine if they'd gotten it? Was there somebody in the truck with him?
No, I don't believe there was.
So,
But to get back to your point, no one is more of admires these people more than me. No one admires these men and these women that get into these news helicopters and chase down these stories that are fast moving, that are covering a large piece of geography, that, you're right, puts them in sometimes very close proximity to other aircraft, other news aircraft, and they have to watch out the window to make sure that they don't hit those aircraft, and at the same time get a good picture, a usable picture, you can use. Dean Buttram, who worked for a television station in Bakersfield, who lost his life as the result of a mid-air collision. And he was covering this. And you know the Dean Buttram story at all?
No, I don't.
Well, he lost his life in a mid-air collision while he was covering a chase. And the footage that he got, the actual camera footage that he got of this chase was not usable. It was not very well done. So you have an instance like that, the man is sending you unusable video, and the poor man loses his life. So, Phil, it's a tough job, but it's a job that they have to...
Well, hold on for a minute. I want to ask you a question. This is the point of what I'm trying to say. These men and women can lose their lives up there flying around in this congested airspace for however long. And why? Because they're following some dumb car chase.
are doing their job.
But they could die, Don. I'm asking you, as a fellow professional, is it right to have them, to order a man into the air and say, get up there, get in that chopper, and get over that chase and follow that thing, and no matter which way he's going, because the guy, these clowns go everywhere?
I think that you have to, yes, it's part of the job.
So is this really, in other words, it's not heavy news, it's some drunk in a freaking tow truck.
That man in the tow truck might, at any given point, he may endanger the lives of others. He may not.
I mean, 90% of these people don't do anything other than just lead the cops on a chase. They get out of the car, they're under arrest, and that's the end of that. And meanwhile, there's a guy up there in a chopper who could very well die. I think this thing that happened in Phoenix, it was some ridiculous car chase, a speeding incident.
I understand what you're saying, and I know it seems frivolous, but you have to look at the business side of this as well. People tune in for these car chases. I don't know why it is. I have to be honest with you, Phil. I join you in sort of scratching my head as well. I'm here to provide a service, and that is to report the news. If the viewer is that kind of an individual where he doesn't really care what happens to a chopper pilot, for instance, but he just wants to see his car chases, and that, unfortunately, is the way most people are.
And well, wait, you're blaming the viewer for the fact that somebody ordered this guy into the air.
Well, they want to see these things. People want to watch car chases. And we can't get around that. I'm not going to explain it. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not here to tell you, well, here are the reasons why people like to watch cars. All I can tell you is people like watching them. People do watch them. And we have to get someone in the air. That's the only place to put a camera where you can follow these. And so if someone loses his life in the pursuit of one of the, you know, following one of these car chases, it's unfortunate that people need to watch these things to the point where a man gets killed. It disgusts me. I get off the air some nights after covering these car chases, and I'm physically ill. I am physically ill. And I wish there was something we could do. But
well, I mean, forgive me if I'm saying something here that offends you. I'm having a hard time believing that.
Why is that?
Because you're saying, you know, people want to see this, and it makes me physically ill, but we got to show it. I mean, isn't there something that you could do?
What do you want me to do, Phil? I can't. I understand your question. I understand your concern, and I am very much in your corner on this. I am disgusted by viewers who want to watch car chases. They make me sick because, as you said, they put the pilot of those helicopters at risk. Okay, and what do I do when my job is to report the news?
And all right, well, hold on. Let's talk a little bit more about this. We have Don Bourbon on the line.
I'd like to, because I don't want the impression left that I don't care about these pilots risking their lives. And
well, you're putting it all on the backs of the viewers, saying the viewers make him sick because they demand to see car chases, which puts the helicopter pilots at risk. It puts the I don't know. We'll be right back. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're talking to Don Bourbon from Channel 19 News. We'll have Dr. Jim Sadler up later on in the program as well. And some other goodies here tonight on this Tuesday night, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back. We're on here with Don Bourbon from Channel 19 News. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and Don is in the Channel 19 newsroom right now. I know you're getting ready for another report at 11 o'clock, right?
Our 11 o'clock. We do four reports, Phil. We do the 5, 6, and 7, and then we do the 11 o'clock. And we're very, very happy to let you know and let your listeners know that we are up for an Emmy for our 7 o'clock.
Fantastic.
And one of the reasons I have to tell you is because we do a great deal of mobile reporting during the 7 o'clock hour, and that means our air our Air Mobile, which is the J-Day and the Air Mobile crew. Now, when they had that car chase today, you know that people are tuning in. You can't not give people what they want.
But I'm saying the pilots are up there in a congested airspace and can get killed, as many have been killed. So do you feel like sometimes they're put up there for unnecessary reasons?
Well, you say unnecessary.
Like, it's just a car chase, man, of which there are many on any given day. Is it news or is it just a way to get viewers?
At a time when a viewership is down, we have to fight for every viewer. We have to fight for every viewer. This is, especially at local TV news, in a market the size of Los Angeles, or in any other large market where you have 7, 8, 9 VHF television stations and news bureaus, as we do here, and you're fighting for every one of your viewers. And let me tell you something, Phil. I came up in this business hard scrabble. I was a reporter. I did traffic. I did sports. I did it all. I was a news director. I also was a guy that... take that out of here, will you, please? Take that out of here.
What is that?
They're making... They have... There's an espresso machine here. Who's that for?
Mr. Dean.
Mr. Dean, okay.
Mr. Dean?
Yeah, he's our general manager. Is he here? Boy, that's the general manager of the station is still here. And so I came up hard scrabble. And I had to fight, and I had to claw, and I had to do everything and anything I could to get viewers. And there were some nights I didn't come home. There were nights when I was here or wherever I was working all night, 24 hours. I was working mobile units. I was working. I did it all. So when I learned the hard way that in order to get viewers and in order to maintain viewers and maintain your position in this business. See, I'm not working in Fresno.
No, I know that you're... I'm not
working in Fresno. I'm not in Oklahoma City. I'm not, I'm not in Joliet, Illinois. I'm in Los Angeles. Okay? That's like Chicago. That's like New York. That's like D.C. I had to fight every inch of the way to get here. And you asked me about a pilot who is covering a chase... And do I worry about whether he gets killed or not? I do worry if he gets killed. But as I told you, I'm fighting for every viewer. A man gets killed, a man gets killed. I don't know. To make me sound callous, I think is wrong, Phil.
I'm not trying to make you sound anything. I mean, you're saying that getting viewers...
It's very important. And I'm sorry that those people died in Phoenix. And I wish pilots of aircraft and the pilots of traffic aircraft and news aircraft weren't killed. But if you ask me, is there a choice between not putting that guy in the air and risking losing viewers... And putting him in the air and getting viewers and possibly risking losing him.
You're telling me you'd risk losing him?
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I'm just asking you, what would you do?
If I knew that man's life was... If I would find...
No, you're taking too much time to answer that. What would you do? What would you do?
I would try to...
But you've got to answer. This is a split-second decision. That's how hardcore, that's how hardball this business is. Viewers, but the man may die. No viewers, you lose your job, but he lives, he goes home, he has an egg salad sandwich, whatever you want the guy... I don't know what it is you want this guy to do. And
What do I want him to do? I mean, just not die.
All right, so he doesn't die. And guess what? You get a pink slip. This guy, Dean, the guy who got the espresso here she comes again. Hold on. She's over. Scotty, what are you doing? This guy really drinks the espresso. Yeah, dude, this is the GF, okay? This is a guy that's breathing down my neck right now, okay?
Wait, is he there?
No, he's in his office, but I'm saying these are the guys that breathe down my neck for viewers. Okay, you done? Okay, well, I don't know. How many of those can he drink? That's the second espresso he's had. Are you ready for that? So,
we got a break, okay?
You got a break, all right. I'm trying to tell you something here.
I understand, but we do have to break. I'll be right back, all right?
That's fine, Phil, but I'm not... What the hell are you...
All right, hold on for a minute. 877-876-PHIL. The world-famous Phil Henry Show will be right back with Don Berman. Are these car chases worth it? They put the pilots at risk of losing their lives that follow these things. Are these car chases really worth it if you're going to, you know, kill somebody? The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
That's four espressos, as far as I can...
Phil Hendry.
Do with what we're talking about. Well, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and with me is Don Berman from the Channel 19 Newsroom. We're talking about car chases. Why do our TV, our local television news, as well as national TV news bureaus and newsrooms, why do they need to follow these car chases? Well, it seems quite obvious that...
Would you hold on for a minute, because you're going to answer that question?
Yes, I'm going to answer it.
Well, because you didn't know the answer to that question. I was the one that had to...
Well, I mean, I know the answer is that gets viewers.
Yes, but you were asking that question last half hour in a manner that bespoke someone who was truly bemused. Obviously, Phil, it gets viewers. Now, I want to bring up one thing. And you said, why? What has that got to do with anything?
And well, why would you bring that up on the air?
Because I think it goes to the heart of what we're talking about. You did some voiceover work for Channel 19. You did some station IDs. And you did these back in December. And look at this. She's back. How many espressos does this guy get?
Okay, let's forget about the espresso.
Right next to my desk. All right. So, by the way, our general manager is Jack Dean. And if you don't think Dean is short for something, never mind.
Is short for what? Something Italian?
Okay, you said it, I didn't. Let the record show you said it, I didn't. But okay, I will agree with you. Look at it. Is that for him or not? Well, okay, so what has he got, a party going in his office?
Forget about the espresso machine, will you, and tell me what you're saying?
What I'm saying is the following thing. You had your attorney call our program director, all right, Jordan Jason, because... You hadn't gotten paid. You had an attorney call. Now, why? God.
What was that?
It's pissing me off. Get him in. Get him out here.
Look, I can't have you on the air if you're going to scream like that. What was that about?
It's angering me, Phil. I've got a news report to do it. Get Mr. Dean out here, will you?
Okay, I'm talking to you. I don't need to. You're talking to Mr. Dean, your general manager, and I'm talking to you about something else.
I know, but I've got to get. Hey, how you doing? Hey, do I got to have this espresso machine?
I got it. There's people in my office.
I understand there's people in your office. I'm on the air right now with Phil Hendry on the Phil Hendry Show. Okay? And every time I'm trying to talk, she's firing up that machine like you're going to do right now. What are you doing?
I'm going to get myself a coffee. I don't understand what you don't like about it. You don't like a coffee?
I love coffee.
Take it easy. Take it easy. Take it easy, okay?
Mr. Dill, take it easy, huh?
Take it easy. Just take it easy, all right? Relax, relax, huh? Don't get nervous. Don't get nervous.
Mr. Dean, I'm just telling you, don't get nervous, all right? Don't get nervous. I'm not nervous, sir. All right. So, in any event...
Yes, I had my attorney call your program director because I had not been paid.
You do that, and you're asking about the well-being of our chopper pilots? I don't understand that. The money you want to get paid for those commercials. All right, don't you think those... I don't...
What has that got to do with chopper pilots being forced into the air to cover a police chase that could be dangerous for them?
I think it is hypocritical of you to talk about money you need from Channel 19 while you're also telling me that our chopper pilot up there, Jay Day, is in physical trouble. Jesus, here he is again. Hey, what's up? Mr. Dean, sir, don't get nervous, huh? I'm not nervous. You're playing with that. I ain't playing with nothing, right? Yeah, I got some people in my office, huh?
He's got some people in his office.
Yeah, I know he's got people in his office. Thank you.
Now, take it easy, huh? Take it easy, huh? Try to mess my pilot. God. The guy reminds me of that guy, Frank Martino, in Goodfellas. So I,
Yeah, Billy Batts.
Billy Batts. He's talking just like Billy Batts. Don't get nervous. Don't get nervous. So that's my problem, and it is something that I think is... I just feel it to be hypocritical of you, that's all.
All right, there's nothing hypocritical, if you don't mind me saying, there is nothing hypocritical about me asking for money that is owed me by your television station and at the same time express my fears vis-a-vis your pilots who are working on those news stories. I mean, look, it is a dangerous thing for those guys to be doing. It's dangerous for them to be flying around up there when you've got, when you've got all of that air traffic and you have all of those guys that are flying around. And I think I've got, as a matter of fact, who do we have on the line here?
Yeah, okay, this is Bob Bakian.
Okay, here's Bob Bakian's on the line with us right now. Bob is a guy, as you probably know, Bob. Bob has done air reporting for us for a long time. Bob, how are you?
Well, it's Bob Bakian. I'm doing very well in the music, please.
We got to get the music, okay.
What do you mean you got to get the music?
This guy can't talk without his music. Hold on for a minute.
What does that mean?
Hold on for a minute. While we're getting his music, the point that I'm trying to make is this. You know, it's a dangerous thing, and it doesn't make any difference whether or not I am there. Okay.
Phil, this is Bob Bakian reporting here, and it's great to be on the program. What can I do for you? What the hell is this, Henry?
Don't worry about it. Bob, you have been flying for many years as a news copter pilot, you know.
That's exactly right, Phil.
Is it dangerous? Do you fear for your life?
Sir, I do fear for my life. For every time I'm in the air, it scares me. It scares seven shades of feces out of me, to be honest with you, just to tell you, just to be very perfectly honest. And, oh, my God, who is this guy?
Hold on, will you?
I'm sorry. This is Don Berman, Bob. And, Don, how are you?
I'm fine. Now, what do you mean it's seven shades of feces? God!
I'm telling you that I get very scared when I'm flying. As a matter of fact, right now, oh, my God. Look at this. Look at it. Yeah! That's what I'm talking about right there, you see.
What?
Oh, you stumbling, muttering. I know. What was that about, Phil?
Was that really? That wasn't a crash.
Yeah, that was really a crash, Phil. Are you an idiot or something? That was a sound effect that I've got a handy. See, anytime I want to take the day off, I'll pretend like I've crashed the aircraft and I'm dead. All kinds of people will get upset. But here's the thing that I wanted to say to you. Oh, come on, will you, Dean? Don't get nervous. I'm not nervous at all. Yeah. You done? That about all you need? Hey, God Almighty.
Where's Bob?
Thank you very much, Phil. Thanks for turning my music back on. This is Bob Bakian reporting.
Oh, now I know who this guy is. This guy's the spaz that can't talk guy. Can't talk good unless he has the music.
Yeah, listen to you talk. Listening to you talk, Don, it sounds like you could use your own music, too.
I need my own music, huh?
I think you do, because I just heard you spaz your way through that phrase.
All right, let's not use that word, if you don't mind. Okay?
So it sounds like you've got some sort of saliva pocket in the back of your throat. You go,
I noticed that, too, Bob, being a professional. But, Phil, the point that I'm making here, as Bob sits there with his music, and I deal with a general manager who's now on his eighth espresso... I understand that you fear for the lives of pilots.
I don't fear for the lives of pilots anymore.
Why not?
They don't fear for their own life. Listen to Bakian, you're a fruit. You know that?
Oh, come on. Just because I'm having some fun, just because I enjoy my life, just because I'm... Oh, my God, I'm going to crash. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, yeah.
Okay, Bob. Okay, Bob.
Right there.
Oh, my God. Phil, turn the music off, will you, please? I mean, I don't mean to tell you how to do your show, but do you think he...
No, he didn't crash. Bob Bakian. We'll find out what happened to him, bud.
You got the number?
Do I have the number? You're the guy that called him.
Well, I will tell you this much, and I don't mean to be the kind of guy who is always going on and on about what is wrong with our business. But I can tell you, oh, God.
Let me talk to this guy.
What?
Let me talk to them.
Phil Hendry. I'm just saying, how are you doing?
I'm good, sir. You've been coming over to the espresso machine.
I've got some people in the office, you know. I got some people in the office. You ever done people in the office? I've had people in the office. Now, you got people in the office. I understand that.
Hey.
You. No, I got people. I got some people in there.
You got people? You're working late, sir. Obviously, you're working late, huh?
Yeah, obviously, I'm working late. Don't worry about it. Don't get nervous. It's none of your business, okay? It's very confidential business. Oh, you know what? I forgot one more. My mother's here. You know, why does that machine have to be near my desk? Okay? Why does that machine have to be near my desk? Hold on for a minute. Hey, will you come and help me with these? I got like 9 of these, huh?
Okay.
I got like 9 of these, huh? I got to put them on my head. What do you want me to do with these, huh? I got to stick them on my head? I got to walk around like a clown with the espresso on my head, huh? Is that what you want me to do? And what do you want? I said, why does the espresso machine, sir, have to be near my desk? I don't know. You know, I like you, Don. I like to come see you, huh? I come over, see you, and say, everything's with Don. I know everything's good with Don. I know everything's good, you know? It's good, huh? It's good, huh? I'm going to make another one. Just because I like you. I like hanging around you.
Okay, well, with that, we're going to have to go, okay?
Oh, great. Thanks a lot. So now he's got to hang up on me because you're hanging around making espressos. My mom, she can't win them. If I make one with my mother, my father's going to show up, too. All right, is that it? Get that machine out of here.
You're going to be in trouble.
Oh, am I going to be in trouble? I just, you know what I did? I kicked the espresso machine over, Phil. And now one of the interns said I'm going to be in trouble. Do you love that?
You are. You're going to be in big trouble.
Ooh.
Okay, Don. Thank you very much.
Ooh.
You're going to be in trouble from Mr. Dean.
Ooh.
Okay, Don. Thank you. You might want to grow up a little bit there.
Oh, don't worry about it. This kid's been busting my chops ever since she started working here. She thinks she's the second coming of Katie Couric. Ain't that right?
You're going to be in trouble for doing that.
Ooh. Yeah, big deal. What do you want?
I got to hang up. Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL is our number, and Art Griego is going to join me for just a second here. Art is a pilot. He's a retired pilot, nonetheless a pilot. He's at Santa Monica Airport tonight. And Art, did you hear the conversation I had there with Don Berman?
Well, I did, Phil, and I have to tell you that it was nonsensical, I think, but there was some... kernel of truth in what Don was saying, because we know as pilots that we feel pretty expendable when it comes to the kind of work that you're talking about. When it comes to being a traffic reporter or a news reporter, while you are also operating an aircraft or a helicopter, it's extremely dangerous. You're flying at a lot of different elevations. Now, it depends on the police agencies and the aviation, the local aviation authority is generally the police. The local police are going to tell you where you can be.
The police will dictate a crime scene. You know, when they have a helicopter.
Right. Yeah. If they're chasing a suspect and they're using it, especially at night. They're going to tell you to stay clear, but I think that essentially what you heard from Don Berman was a representative of the news media that doesn't care whether we live or die. And he was trying to put it off on the viewers. I don't think the viewers get up in the morning and say, boy, I sure do hope a helicopter pilot dies. I think what is more likely is there's a station management guy or a news guy like Mr. Berman who gets up in the morning and says, I hope something big happens today so that we have the chance to cover it. And to that end, I think it's I think they don't care.
All right, well, Don Berman's back on the line here. Now, Don.
That is unconscionable. Am I on the air?
You are on the air, and I just, before you talk, I just want to say that this is simply Art Griego giving his opinion.
Well, I don't know who Art Griego is, and, I can tell you what he's saying is unconscionable. To say that I don't care whether these pilots live or die is not accurate. I don't want them to die. But I stand by what I said. I don't want them to die, but I'd rather that they not live if it means by them not living.
Yeah, go ahead. Finish your talk.
Who am I speaking with?
This is Art Griego, the guy you've never heard of.
Well, Mr. Griego, I don't mean any offense, sir.
Yeah, sure you don't.
I don't mean any offense. I'm speaking to you just the way it is. If you have to die
so that you get your contract for next year and do what? Go to Mexico for a longer vacation?
What is that supposed to mean?
Well, what if I have to die for what?
If you have to die so that I get...
So that you get more viewers.
Yeah, but see, you guys have backed me into a corner now. Now, I sound like the world's biggest ass.
Well, sir, I'm going to tell you, I don't think I had to give you any help there.
And that, I expect an answer like that. I've never heard of you, but I expected you to say that. Isn't that interesting how I've never heard of you, but I just know you're going to say something that's going to be a slap across my face.
And, sir, the things you said on the program tonight about how, being a pilot and being,
I can tell. I don't know who you are, but I know you got a drinking problem. Am I right or wrong?
Wait a minute. Don't answer that.
I don't mind answering the question. Yes, I do.
Aha! Aha. You know how I know?
Because you had a drinking problem at one time. Is that how you know?
How dare you? Is that right, Phil?
That is right.
How dare you? That was something that no one knew. And
you've been on my show talking about your drinking problem and the sexual escapades and adventures with interns and young assistant producers and this and that. You've talked about this on my show ad nauseum.
No, I have. I brought up a feature report that we did.
So, in other words, you're a drinker.
I am a drinker, but I have it under control. How about you?
I'm not supposed to drink.
But you still do.
Yes, I do. I still do.
Boy, you got a pair on you to come on this program and tell me that you've got a right to live, and I don't have a right to ratings, and you're still drinking, and I'm still drinking too, but I am not, I'm not drinking and flying an airplane. All right, you know what, Phil? I can see that I'm a big hit on your show tonight. For you to make fun of me, so I'll bid you adieu, and I wish you a very, very profitable and a very prosperous tomorrow.
I don't think you mean a word of that.
No, I don't mean a word of it. I don't. I hope the two of you come down with leprosy. Good night.
Wow, that's...
That's Don Berman.
That's Don Berman, huh?
Yeah, Channel 19 News.
Well, I will pay very close attention to my nose overnight.
What does that mean?
The leprosy.
Oh. Don is a little sensitive, given his past. He's had a great many run-ins with a great many people. He's an Emmy winner, at least I think that's what he said. Is he back?
Yes.
Don, I can't keep having you back on the air if you're hanging up.
No. I just wanted you to know that there's no hard feelings, that the two of you can continue to talk about me like I'm a walking ass. Go ahead. Go ahead and talk about me that way. I'm perfectly all right with it. I'm Don Berman. A very pleasant good evening.
Is that how he talks all the time? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. Don's a good man, but he does have a drinking problem. Let's get back to what you were saying. That you feel used. You feel as if there has been, as a pilot, you feel as if... What is it?
Yeah,
I don't care. I don't want to be on your show. I don't. I could care less whether you live or die. That part is right. But Dean's here from our station management.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
Hey. I want to apologize, you know, about the thing that I did. And I got to do another one.
He wanted to come out and apologize for the coffee that he's about to...
Well, then why even call me up and tell me about it?
I don't know. I mean, I told the guy that...
Okay, that's it, bud. No more calls from Channel 19, okay?
You got it. No more calls from Channel 19, Robert.
I'm not answering the call. No more calls from Channel 19. Art, thank you very much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure, Phil, and, you know, you have my sympathies.
Thank you. We'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We do have Dr. Jim Sadler for a rebuttal, I guess, some equal time on last night's show coming up. We'll be right back.
One more thing, Phil. I don't mind if you talk about me like I'm something that dropped out of the back end of a cow. That's fine. That's
Phil Henry.
Fine. I'm used to it.
Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
All right, the world-famous Phil Henry Show here, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, online at philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com, where you can get a backstage pass and watch Phil TV in HD right now. And you can also listen to thousands of hours of archived radio shows, our daily radio show, which is a podcast for you, available tomorrow. We also have, I think we have the first hour of each show available free for live streaming, just to kind of, you know, get you into that. So, you know, join us at philhenryshow.com. We have a podcast that we're going to start to do in about 2 weeks. We'll begin podcasting, and that's just an extension of overall kind of a promotional, as well as a new form of expression, if you will, for our show. So we hope you can join us for all of those, and the podcast is going to be absolutely free. So we hope you enjoy it.
Hope you can join it.
Well, if I say I hope you can join it, that means
you're like a Siamese twin.
Okay, in any event, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Joining us right now on our newsmaker line is Dr. Jim Sadler, who had been on the show, was on our show last night, and we've got him on again today. When we had you on last night, Dr. Sadler, you actually had called in, and you were talking... I think you were talking about a man's voice box.
Well, no. Am I on the air now?
Yes.
When I called your program last night, Phil, I was calling in to talk with the gentleman who was upset, Mr. Bonafide, for John. Was talking about John Edwards.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
I called in to comment on what he was saying about John Edwards, which I thought was very bizarre at the time. I don't remember what he was saying about John Edwards. I think it was mostly he said something like he was a dumbass magnet.
Yeah, that's right. He was saying that John Edwards was stupid, much like his son.
That's right. His son, who was in Vietnam, he said his son. Well, while I was talking about that, what happened was a man called in who had a laryngectomy, which you say I'm not pronouncing that right, and I'm a doctor and you're not, so I don't know where you get...
Well, sir, it's called a laryngectomy, you know.
Well, really, and you got your medical degree. See,
I don't need a medical degree. The whole reason why we're you know, mocking you a little bit
was because you said right there.
The whole reason why you were mocking me is because I said right there. Wow.
No, what you said right there, laryngectomy, that's not a real term. And you're a doctor. And so I said, well, why don't you know that word?
And I, here was my point. Forget about whether I know the word or not. What I found to be unprofessional and what I found to be another example of media run amok was you and your guest mocking me. And at one point, your guest even said that he felt I should have a laryngectomy, or laryngectomy, as you call it, because of my speech impediment. And he never gave me an opportunity to. I'm not going to talk any better than I do now, but I can if I feel like it. Okay? Do you know that, Stanley? About
no, I don't. You can talk better than you do now if you feel like it.
Yeah. That's right. So.
All right. Well, okay. I don't want to get. I really just want to say this. As a doctor, shouldn't you know how to pronounce these words?
I do, and I didn't think it was going to be an issue. I was talking to two men, and I say this with great kindness, Phil, but I didn't think that the two of you were that intelligent that you would notice the way that I said the word.
All right, so you didn't think I'd know what a laryngectomy is.
No, I didn't think you two, especially the elderly gentleman, you guys are going to start to bust my castanets over how I pronounce laryngectomy. I've been to school. I've been to medical school. I know what it is, okay, and I know how to treat certain maladies relative to the larynx, but because I don't pronounce it good.
What is that? Why don't you?
I don't know. I didn't pay it. It wasn't that important to me, okay? It wasn't that. I know what it is. I know how to treat certain maladies. But to pronounce, when they take your voice box out, I got to pronounce it good. Why?
Well, if anything, to inspire confidence in your patients. But I would also think that when you get board certified for something...
Then I read up on it, but I don't. It's never been that important to me.
All right, so can I just ask you a question?
Certainly, go ahead. I'm not telling you you can't.
All right, I mean, when they take your appendix out, do you know how to pronounce that?
Mr. Henry, I'm not on your show to be tested, sir.
I know that, but when you tell me that it just wasn't important when you were in medical school to learn how to pronounce these words, and if I went to you. And
well, I wouldn't, again, with respect, I wouldn't have you as a patient.
Why not?
Because I don't need someone coming in and breaking my castanets. I don't need you walking into my office. You know, I don't need it, Mr. Henry.
Well, so I'm just a patient. I'm off the street, and I've got a doctor, a recommendation for you. And
if you start breaking if you start picking up on the, hitting on the reception, I'm just saying, isn't that something, you'd probably do that, wouldn't you?
Do what?
Start hitting on the receptionist and breaking my you-know-whats because I don't talk good.
Sir, I wouldn't hit on your receptionist, okay?
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay, I wouldn't hit on your receptionist if I'm sitting in your office and I'm there to have some treatment done. I may be a little, frankly, doctor's offices make me nervous.
But you never hit on some doctor's receptionist.
I'm not saying that I haven't. I'm just telling you that if I'm going to see you and I sit down in your examination room,
right,
and you come in and you say to me, Mr. Henry, your laryngectomy.
Well, when am I going to say that? You're a radio announcer, and I'm going to come in and I'm going to say, oh, and Mr. Henry, I got to take your voice box out. And what is that, for laughs? And
what if you found out that I had cancer? What if I don't know,
Well, if you're a radio announcer and you came into my office and I found out you had throat cancer and I had to give you a laryngectomy, I would go look the word up and practice it a few times in my office.
You'd go look the word up and practice it?
Yes, sir, because I know I'd be giving you devastating news. I'm not going to say, Mr. Henry, you have cancer of the throat. I'm going to have to give you a bug of the... See, I don't even know... your whole point here...
You know, if you're on a radio show and you can't pronounce the word, You know, people are going to think you don't know what you're talking about.
I could care less. I could care. I called your show to make a comment about some old creep. About an old guy that was talking about,
What, if you don't mind me asking, okay?
What?
What do you call when the appendix comes out?
So in other words, you want to find out...
I want to know, sir, if it's not that important to you, what when you pronounce words...
It's called apexomy, I think. Am I close?
No, you're not even close.
It's called the appendix, I know that.
Okay, oh, wow, that's great.
Now, look, it, sir, I know what I'm talking about.
Okay, can you... So you could diagnose if somebody had appendicitis?
Yes, sir.
But you just don't know what the surgery is called?
I know what it's called. I don't sweat bullets every night looking up how to pronounce it. I'm not at home bleeding. I'm not at home sweating blood. Like Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. Right. You know when he was sweating blood. I'm not at home doing that. I'm not at home sweating bullets. Oh gosh.
Take a stab at it.
It's called, you have your appendix out. It's called having an epidubebity. I don't know.
An appendectomy.
All right.
So, all right. Would you practice that?
Sir, I've answered your questions. I called up for the specific reason that you asked me to, but I also wanted equal time last night. I felt that I was being mocked behind my back.
You were being mocked behind your back. And I'll tell you something else.
So you admit it?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I do admit it.
What a pair you've got.
Okay, but I will tell you something else. When you come on my show and you say, I don't know how to say appendectomy, I can't say laryngectomy.
Boy, and you know all those words, and the reason you do is why? Because you talk on the radio for a living. So you use your mouth for a living. I don't. I use my brains and my skill as a surgeon. And excuse me if I don't know, it's called an appendectomy. Or however they say it. I didn't learn to pronounce it good. If I knew that, for instance, Paul Prudhomme, who was a big fat man, had to have his appendix out, and he wouldn't be able to eat for a few days, I would go and learn how to pronounce that word so he wouldn't be shocked to find out that he had to have what they call it.
Okay, so if I had to have my voice box out or Paul Prudhomme had to have his appendix out, you'd practice what the surgery is called so the two of us would be...
It wouldn't be shocking.
All right, can you hang on for just a second here, Dr. Sadler?
Well, I don't know, because I don't want to be made to look like a horse's...
Yeah, hang on for just a minute, Dr. Sadler. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Henry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler. Last night... Well, he's getting his equal time right now.
Get that other guy call, too.
I don't want to talk to the other guy. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Phil here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, on the line here with Dr. Jim Sadler from last night's show. And we did take the liberty, even though I didn't really want to talk to this guy. And there's nothing against talking to you, Mr. Bonafide, but Mr. Sadler wanted to come on the program and talk about how he felt that he hadn't been treated fairly, and I think that you probably needed to hear this.
The reason why I was on your show last night had nothing to do speaking to Mr. Sadler, and my name is Dr. Sadler. All right, Dr. Sadler, I don't mean the man any ill. I'm not trying to... I didn't want to mock you, sir. I just felt that you, like Mr. Henry, I had questions about why you couldn't say laryngectomy, and you pronounced it the way you did. And I think I've answered those questions to Mr. Henry's satisfaction. Mr. Henry?
No, I wouldn't say to my satisfaction, but I would say that you've answered the questions. You just didn't take the time to learn how to say those words.
All right. Now, can I say what I want to say?
Is that, why was I called onto the program?
Bud Dickman called you of his own volition, even though I said I didn't want him to bother you, okay?
Well, you didn't say that. You said, I don't want to talk to that guy.
What did he say?
Said, I don't want to talk to that.
No, okay, that's fine. Whatever I said, it wasn't mean it as a slam on you, Mr. Bonafide. I just wanted to keep this thing simple.
So you didn't want to talk to the old fool, is that it?
What it sounded like to me.
No, I didn't say anything of the sort. What do you want to ask, sir?
You're talking to me?
Yes.
Well, now that I have answered your questions the way you wanted me to answer them, I'd like to ask you a question. You two, last night, tore into me because I couldn't say Lamanafkity and all these other words. And during that commercial break, I looked them up. And I've made a commitment to myself as a doctor, so I will know how to say Lamanafkity and...
Oh, my God, will you listen to this guy? You know, this is, now I remember who you are. Can I finish what I'm saying, sir?
Let's let him finish, all right?
No, but now I remember who this guy is. He last night, everything was Lamanafkity.
That is correct, and that's why they have me on the show to talk about it.
And that's why they have me. I said it.
All right. All right, you know, I'm done. Thank you, and have a very...
Hold on for a minute. Put Lloyd on hold here. I want to talk to you. Now, go ahead.
Is he on hold?
Yes.
I had asked the people who had... I had asked the people...
All right, let's start all over again.
Yeah! I just broke off a hold, and I'll tell you something...
All right, no more talking to that guy tonight.
What the hell just happened?
Don't worry, no more talking to him tonight.
All right.
I don't want him on the air. I don't want to talk to him tonight, okay? Broke off a hold.
I don't know how he does it, but he did it.
You tell me that guy broke off a hold?
That's what I'm telling you. So let's move on now.
Boy.
Let's move on now. What do you want to ask me, or what do you want to state so that you feel as if you've gotten equal time?
I want to say the following thing. I'm married to a woman who is 30 years younger than me. I am a weightlifter. I have appeared in bodybuilding competitions. I have been a clean and jerk champion.
I'll bet.
Who said that?
Okay, bud, get out of here.
What did he say?
He said, I'll bet.
What?
He's gone.
And see, now I.
All right, so you've been a weightlifting champion.
I've been a weightlifting champion in both the advanced and senior classes, and my wife is 30 years younger than me. I have been in bodybuilding competition.
Get out of here, bud. Get out of here, bud.
Is that the guy that said I'll bet when I said I won clean and jerk?
Yes.
It's not about masturbation.
I know, he's just making a joke.
He said he's making a joke.
Yes, he's making a joke. You don't know that?
All right, let me start all over again. Because I wanted to...
All right, start all over again. This is what you want to say.
I have won bodybuilding competition. My wife is 30 years younger than me.
Were you going to say she's a piece?
Oh, my God, I want to hurt him. And
Bud, would you get out of here?
That's what he said the first time.
I never told you I thought my wife was a piece. If I did, I would never say that to... I wouldn't say it to him. I might say it to you.
Okay. Let's start all over again and tell us your credentials so that we can know that you are not some fly-by-night guy that can't pronounce words properly.
All right. I have one... God... I won bodybuilding competitions.
I'm sorry, sir.
I won bodybuilding competitions. I have guns on me. I mean, my arms are so well developed that I roll the window down on my car, put my arm out, and my arm's big, and so people... people back off in traffic. My wife is
30 years younger than you.
I wanted to do it.
Go ahead.
My wife is 30. My wife.
I'm sorry.
My wife is 30.
So this has been very emotional, huh?
Yes. My wife is 30 years younger than me. I've won bodybuilding competitions.
Yeah.
I was the national clean and jerk champion of the senior class.
In high school?
No, you ass of all.
Well, that's what I thought he meant. You mean senior division as an age group?
Yes.
Well, when you said the clean and jerk in senior class...
I won the competition.
Your wife is 30 years younger.
I hope you die with blood in your mouth.
What did he say?
You don't want to know, man. You don't want to know.
Oh, God. Man, I heard that man out of the other room getting a Coca-Cola. What did he say?
He said he hoped Phil died with blood in his mouth.
Wow.
Oh, God. I couldn't help it. I was laughing, and I was laughing. So he came on for equal time. I don't know if that worked out for him. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
My wife is 30 years younger than me.
Phil Henry. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil 877-876-7445. And I know we did cover the John Edwards case last night with Mr. Bonafide. It was also the subject of Dr. Sadler's appearance, return appearance on our show tonight. But we do have a one more bit of John Edwards news. It's really grotesque, man. How do I put this? It's pretty grotesque, and it has to do with the testimony that was in the trial today. And for that information, we'll go to Margaret Gray, who is also, as you know, covering the trial for the Dicklin Syndicate and among a number of other publications. It's also the subject of her column, A Little Bird Told Me, tomorrow morning. And you've been at that trial every day. Margaret, how's it looking out there?
I think it's a fascinating trial. I think it's something that that is going to redound, I think, negatively for John Edwards for the rest of his life and long into the years after John Edwards is with us. This is an unseemly and it's a base and unseemly display for a former United States senator. And a man that was at one time a candidate for the presidency of the United States. In testimony today by Andrew Young, who, as you know, Phil, is the aide. This was a young man who was an aide to John Edwards for a great many years, not to be confused with the former UN ambassador. Andrew Young was on the stand today, and he was quoted. He said, in quoting John Edwards, the former senator referred to Riel Hunter, a woman that he carried on an affair with, a woman who mothered a child of his. He referred to her as a slut. Now, John Edwards, and this was Andrew...
He called her a slut. This was Andrew Young.
This was Andrew Young recalling a conversation that John Edwards had with him. He said that John Edwards' first reaction when he learned his mistress may be pregnant was to downplay the chance he was the father, calling the woman a crazy slut. According to Edwards, it was the summer of 2007, and John Edwards was in the midst of a presidential campaign. Andrew Young testified that the former North Carolina senator hatched a plan to funnel money from his rich friends to provide the woman a monthly allowance, even though Young said he doubted that it was legal.
And who doubted it was legal?
That Andrew Young doubted it was legal.
Well, did John Edwards doubt that it was legal?
No, the impression that I got, Phil, was that this was something that that's a good point. But it was something that I thought Andrew Young thought was not legal.
Because the way you just said that, it's as if Andrew Young may have thought it was illegal, but it's the way he was quoted there. You're quoting him. It sounds like he might have been referring to John Edwards.
Well, that is a very good point, and looking at it again, that could very well be. I took it to mean that Andrew Young was asked by John Edwards to pursue this, and Andrew Young himself doubted very much that it was legal. Now, months later, as the story continues, Phil, I don't know if you can hear me, but I'm on I'm not on a cell phone. I'm actually literally on a payphone. Near Stuckey's, if you know what, Stuckey's, yeah. This is a Stuckey's restaurant. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, they're the restaurants that are primarily down south. They're not restaurants. They're kind of like, are they rest stops, or?
Well, it's like a rest stop, and they have pecan pie that they're very proud of, and they have all the little trinkets. They've got the little black... Well, I don't... What are you allowed to call them? They've got the little black jockey and...
Oh, boy.
Well, I don't know, Phil. It was a place with a phone. Going on, months later, as word of the candidate's affair began to leak in the run-up to the crucial Iowa caucuses, Young said Edwards asked the aide to falsely claim paternity of the baby. So, in other words, John Edwards
wanted Andrew Young to take the fall.
Well, it wouldn't be the fall, but he wanted him to take, yes, responsibility for the baby. Young has been, as you know, the lone witness during the first 2 days of Edwards' criminal trial. The 58-year-old Edwards has pled guilty to all of this nonsense. The exact quote, Phil, is the following line. He said she was a crazy slut, and there was a 1 in 3 chance that the child, was his. So this is a very unseemly, it certainly does not bespeak a Southern gentleman, which I think John Edwards would like to think of himself as. It does not bespeak a liberal Democrat senator to refer to a woman as a crazy slut. And then to try to get another man, to take responsibility for paternity when you are the one responsible for that woman being pregnant, and she is as well.
Well, I know, but I take your point, and it's a good point. All of a sudden, this is, you may be the father of her child, but let's face it, she's a crazy slut, and...
It's all her fault. This is particularly heartbreaking for me, Phil, because I was a big John Edwards fan. Much like your guest last night, the gentleman that you had on, the Korean War veteran.
Yeah.
He was, I know, a conservative that liked John Edwards. I've always been a Democrat. I've always been a very liberal Democrat. And I really was an Obama fan. But I liked John Edwards because I felt he was fresh. He was clean. He had a clean, fresh, scrubbed... I don't know. There was... When you looked at him... He looked like, this is going to sound, he looked like he'd been to a dentist. You know what I mean by that, Phil?
Well, not really. I mean, I know he looked like he's got nice teeth,
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, in other words, he looked like the kind of man that you could bring into a room and say, everyone, this is my president. I'm an American, and this is what, this is what we elected.
So Barack Obama is not that kind of a guy.
I didn't say that at all. Don't, Phil, please don't go down that road.
You were a Barack Obama supporter. I'm just, because the reason why I say...
Now, don't go down that road, please. Now,
you remember Joe Biden?
Don't go, Frank.
He doesn't want to talk about it, Phil.
Give me the phone. Okay.
Boy, that's great of you to bring on Frank with his gender confusion for him to simply say that you don't want to talk about it. Fine, I won't talk about it. Joe Biden said the same thing.
Oh, God, Frank.
He doesn't want to talk about Joe Biden. Why'd you bring her up?
Thank you. Okay?
He doesn't want to talk about Joe Biden. Why'd you bring her up? So now begins...
Well, Phil, he's got gender confusion.
I know, I know that. But now begins the deterioration of this conversation, like has happened all night tonight with everybody that I've had on the air.
What are you talking about?
I'm just simply saying I won't bring it up.
Good, thank you. Don't bring it up. Where was I? I am a committed supporter of President Barack Obama. He is a handsome, well-spoken, wonderful American president. I just felt before Obama was, you know, at the tip of everyone's tongue, very rapidly Barack Obama became the it guy. So, yes, I supported him.
So before he became the it guy, you were a John Edwards fan.
See, now you're making it sound as if I'm some sort of a flyby, like I go with fads and trends. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, Ms. Gray, you're saying that you were not originally a Barack Obama fan, but you were a John Edwards fan because he was crisp and clean.
I didn't say, what do you mean crisp?
You said he was crisp, clean.
He was fresh and crisp, yes.
Fresh and crisp.
No, you're making it sound like I think he's a head of lettuce, Phil. Let's grow up. I think, you know, that's pretty funny, crisp and...
Fresh, and yeah, it does sound like a head of lettuce. All I'm saying is you liked him before you liked Barack Obama.
Yes, before Barack Obama. You had to vote for Barack Obama at some point. If you were a Democrat, you had to, especially if you live in this town and you're a liberal.
Okay, so, you know, you had to go along with your liberal friends. And
no, I'm not saying that. Let's just drop it. I was a John Edwards fan because I found him crisp and clean. All right?
Okay. All right.
What do you mean, you just what?
I don't know what crisp and clean means.
You don't know what fresh and clean and well-groomed means?
I know what those three things are, yes.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. His teeth are brushed. His breath is fresh. Do you understand?
Yes, the man's personal grooming is fantastic, and I will even go one better, although I don't think you said it. He's handsome.
Yes, he was very, and remains very handsome, yes.
And looks like, all right, so that's why you liked him.
Well, that makes me sound like a facile and empty and shallow ass, and that's not what I am. But I'm saying I liked him. And so, therefore, when I heard these things come out in the trial today, I was very disappointed. I could well imagine, in another world, in another time, on another planet, in another life, that John Edwards and I, let's say, got together. And that this is just a for instance.
Okay.
And let's say I'm pregnant with his child. And I find out that he's called me a slut. And there's a 1 in 3 chance that he's the father. Let's say that that's the case.
All right.
You know, I go and I find him and I beat his ass bloody. That's what I do. Okay, but that didn't happen to me. So I don't have to beat his ass bloody. And excuse my language, but that's what I would do. And my hat is off to Riel Hunter, if I wore a hat, which I don't, but if I were a man, and I wore
You wore a hat.
Well, yes, but I'm getting sidetracked. But if I were a man and I wore a hat, my hat would be off to her. If John Edwards said that I was a slut with a 1 in 3 chance of being the mother of his child, I'd find him and beat him till he urinated blood for a year. You understand?
Yes. I very much do understand. I can understand there's great anger. And
well, any woman would be.
Absolutely. And I, to be honest with you, were she my sister? Okay.
Right.
And I heard that a guy was talking about my sister that way. Whether he was a U.S. senator or not, I'd have some issues with that. So I understand.
But you understand what I meant about him urinating blood for a year. You got that?
Yes, I got that.
Well, what do you think about that?
What am I supposed... I don't understand. Why are you asking me that?
Well, I wondered if that got to you. See, this isn't just about John Edwards. This is about any man that thinks he's going to talk about a woman that way.
I get it, Margaret. I get it. I get it. Your response is angry and violent and would be you would visit physical violence on the man that talked that way about you.
That's right.
And that's what you think.
That's exactly what I think, yes.
If I were you, I would be very careful, though. This man was a former, you know, candidate. And
What are you? The Secret Service, I'm not saying literally. I'm saying that were this another world, if we lived in an alternative universe, if I lived on a planet where there was green air, and let's say we were Vulcans.
Okay, I get it. All right, it's you're being very fanciful. It is a hypothetical. You're talking about this in ways that you don't believe would ever actually occur. But you want me to know, and my audience to know, how angry you would be if that happened.
Exactly, and the fact also that I voted for.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, thank you very much, Margaret. To me, it sounds like you're taking a little too personally.
I knew he'd say that.
Did you know that he went out with her once?
Thank you. Did you know that?
Why are you having Frank tell me this? So you went out with John Edwards?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Margaret. I got to get going.
Oh, so you think I'm a
877-876 Phil. How many is that?
That's the fourth person you've hung up on tonight.
Four people we've hung up on tonight. That's great. One of them busted off hold. That was Lloyd. I think another one told me, one hung up on me. That's right. That was Dr. Jim Sadler, who said he hoped I died with blood in my mouth. Fantastic. And someone else hung up on us with the final words, I hope you get leprosy. Is that it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to be back here on the world. Well, my guests love me. We'll be back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
So I'm the only one you hung up on tonight.
Phil Hendry Show.
It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We are online at philhendryshow.com. Good to have you with us tonight. Now, last night, we were talking, as a matter of fact, with Mr. Bonafide, Mr. Sadler. At one point, I think the name Melon came up. It was Bunny Melon. And we got who?
Got David Hall, went to.
David, what can we do for you, man?
Hey, listen, I'm sorry I don't mean to interrupt the program, Phil, but I did have a comment to make, and I hope that you can help me here. I have listened to you hang up on a lot of guests this evening. I'm wondering what that's about. Yeah, give me another cough.
You've heard me hang up on... I've hung up on one guest.
I heard you hang up on Ms. Gray here.
Yeah, I had to hang up on her because she was going on and on about John Edwards and how she'd beat him until he peed blood. And I don't know, man. I don't like that kind of conversation. She's talking about a public personality, a man that ran for president.
Yeah, no, I understand that. You could have told her. And no, I don't want that. Give me the cappuccino. You could have told her that you didn't appreciate the way she described things, but you hung up on her. And, of course, when you hang up on that woman, I'm the first person she calls.
And so she called you?
Yes, she called me. And I asked her what happened, and she said you hung up on her while you were talking to her about John Edwards.
Well, we were pretty much done with our conversation with her.
Well, what do you mean?
She's covering the John Edwards trial. We had her on. She was editorializing quite liberally, saying that, you know, John Edwards apparently was quoted on in the trial today by his aide as saying, Rielle Hunter's a slut.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, that's pretty heavy. And she goes, yeah, she was really angry, or she sounded angry about it.
Well, she's a reporter. She's not supposed to be angry.
Well, she sure sounded angry.
Well, no, you misinterpreted it. She was being pointed.
Well, what do you call saying that if he was her boyfriend, she'd beat him until he peed blood for a year?
That is a reporter's prerogative, obviously, to interpret how that might feel for someone other than Rielle Hunter. But I don't think that to say that she's angry, she's a professional reporter.
Wait a second, man. Hold on.
Oh, okay, man. You know, I really don't like it when you get into that beatnik thing.
What beatnik thing?
Hey, man. Whoa, man.
Well, you'll pardon me, David, but it's a that's how I was. That's how I was raised. That's who the people I came up with said that word a lot. Excuse me, okay?
Well, I wasn't. All right, I was raised properly, and I don't say, "Hey, man," you know.
Yeah. Okay. Good for you.
Well, don't get pissed off.
Well, you know what? You're getting me sidetracked here. I won't say "man," but what I said was, I said, "Ms. Gray, you sound like you're getting angry." I said, "You're talking about beating this guy up. I would rather you not." You know, you are talking about John Edwards, a former U.S. senator and candidate for the presidency of the United States, and
wait, the presidency? What's that?
The presidency, okay?
Sorry.
I'm at the end of my rope here tonight. You understand? I've been talking to so many dumbasses tonight, you wouldn't even believe it. You wouldn't believe it if I explained it to you in detail.
All right, I apologize.
One dumbass after the next tonight, okay? So she says to me, well, Mr. Henry, I'm just saying in an alternative universe.
Yeah, well, that's what she said. She told me that she said to you she wasn't speaking literally. She was speaking if she were born in a parallel dimension. And she went on to explain what she meant by that. She quoted Isaac Asimov.
Well, there's no need to quote Isaac Asimov. I know what she's talking about. In other words, if she was somebody else. I understand that.
All right, well, see, you're getting... This is what she was afraid of, this tension, this tense thing that you're showing here.
There's no tension that I'm showing, David. I understand. You don't have to get into a whole explanation from Isaac Asimov as to what she means by a parallel dimension.
So you saw the Twilight Zone. And
what Twilight Zone, man? I'm talking about...
The one where the little girl falls to the hole in the wall. Just hold on, will you?
Okay, yeah, I saw that.
That's what she means. If she'd fallen out of bed through a hole.
Yeah, I get it.
So you saw it?
Yes, I saw it.
Well, then why were you giving her a hard time?
David, I wasn't giving her a hard time. I simply said, look at this, now we're out of time.
And even though you saw that Twilight Zone...
What? You know something, man? We're going back 50 years now to a Twilight Zone. 90% of the people don't even know what the hell it is you're talking about. Okay?
They don't know, baby. But you know something? Ever heard of DVD?
Yeah.
So you don't think they bought that one with the little girl goes through the hole in the wall? I bet you they did.
Get out of here. That's another person I just hung up on, David Hall. And if he calls back, I don't want to talk to him. Okay, bud?
I got it.
Thank you.
Now, another thing.
Will you get... We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Henry.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and we go places other talk shows wish they could. They wish they had the living guts, but they don't. And that's okay, because, you know, if you can't. If you don't have the talent, if you don't have the execution, if you don't have the, if you're mentally, you know, stable... If you're not mentally ill, if you had a solid and supportive upbringing, if you had two parents that were home, if you had a mother that was stay at home, if you had a father that went out and worked in an honest profession, then you can't do the show that I do. I'm kidding.
Man, you ripped into your pants there.
What?
Yeah, what'd you say?
I said you ripped into your pants there.
No, I didn't. I'm just joking around. Well, you know how jokes are. I mean, they're part serious.
What kind of parents did you have, anyway? People want to know about it.
You know what? You can find out if you listen to the Paul Gilmartin podcast, which is called the Mental Health Happy Hour. And he just interviewed me on his podcast, and I was very proud to be on it, too. And Paul talks to a lot of people in media about their upbringing, about their influences. He gets into some pretty interesting stuff. It's a very, very different, unique podcast, and I think you really like it. We have a podcast coming up that will be different and unique, and that will be happening in just a couple of weeks, debuting on Sunday, the Phil Henry podcast. It'll be a week from this coming Sunday, the Phil Henry podcast, And you'll be able to get over there and get a free downloadable version of Phil whenever you want us. We'll have some legacy stuff on there. We will have our, you know, current take on life, et cetera, so on and so forth. It'll be the Phil Hendry podcast coming up in just a couple of weeks. But we are going to be featuring quite a bit of the legacy stuff. So I saw this here. I thought maybe y'all would be interested in that.
What is it?
Well, top five regrets of the dying. Now, the only reason why I printed this off is because it was tweeted by a very funny guy and a cat that I know, Peter Serafinowicz, which I know is a really weird name to... Don't try to do it, bud.
Where is Peter?
Serafinowicz. He's very, very well-known comic actor in England and hell of a nice guy and actually linked this story. It's from The Guardian. Top five regrets of the dying. A nurse has recorded the most common regrets... I just think this kind of stuff is interesting. What happened to my glasses, man?
I think you left them upstairs.
That's great, man. I made a point of bringing them with me, and I left them upstairs. Anyway, not a problem. A nurse has recorded the most common regrets of the dying, and among the top ones is, quote, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. What would your biggest regret be if this was your last day of life?
Mine would be...
Well, I haven't asked you guys yet, okay?
Yeah, mine would be up
No, I know what mine is.
Will you hold on for a minute? I'm not interested in either one of you guys telling me what you regret. Gee, let me read this for a second.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think what mine would be.
No, really? Gee, I didn't know that. Hold on for a minute. There was no mention of more sex or bungee jumps. This is what this nurse found out. The nurse who did this informal sort of survey, because he or she worked. Her name is Bronnie. Is that a chick or is that a? Let me see here. Caring for is an Australian nurse who spent several years working. She. Okay. Whew. Man.
Yeah, a guy named Bronnie. That sounds like it could be a guy, though.
It does. It sounds like it could be a guy's name. Bronnie Ware is an Australian nurse who spent several years working in palliative care, caring for patients in the last 12 weeks of their lives. You know, like hospice care. There was no mention in the top regrets of the dying. There's no mention of having more sex. There was no mention of, you know, more bungee jumps. This nurse who counseled the dying in their last days has revealed the most common regrets we have at the end of our lives, and among the top from men in particular was, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. That one I get, you know.
Why?
Well, you work your ass off because you want to make money to protect your family, to take care of your family. You work your ass off because you want to get to a certain level. You want to get higher and higher up the chain of success so that you're making enough money where you are now able to afford a certain amount of freedom. And, I mean, I guess that's really what life is about if you want to get right down to it. For a lot of people, it's having the time, having the freedom to do really whatever the hell it is you want to do, not get up in the morning and go to a job. So in order to do that, you got to work your ass off. And now, at the end of their lives, people are saying, you know what, wasn't worth it.
Yeah, they'd rather just like have the time off even if they can't afford it.
Exactly. Have the time off even if they couldn't afford it. Bronnie Ware is an Australian nurse who spent several years working in palliative care, caring for patients in the last 12 weeks of their lives. She recorded their dying epiphanies in a blog called Inspiration and Chai.
That about tea?
Yeah, that's about tea. God.
What are you talking about?
Well, what are you... No, it's not about tea. It's kind of an I Ching kind of a deal, man. You know, I don't know.
What's that?
Well, chai, chi, I don't know. But it ain't about tea. If you think it's about chai tea, maybe it is about tea. I don't know. Which gathered so much attention that she put her observations into a book called The Top Five Regrets of the Dying. Ware writes of the phenomenal clarity of vision that people gain at the end of their lives and how we might learn from their wisdom. When questioned about any regrets they had on anything they would do differently, she says, common themes surfaced again and again. How about that?
So the people that died, they said the same thing?
She said common themes emerged, maybe not exactly the same thing. Here are the top five regrets of the dying as witnessed by Bronnie Ware in this book, The Top Five Regrets. I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. That's the number one regret. How about that?
Boy, that's kind of unusual.
It's very... How did the American flag get behind me on our video cast? I will not have the American flag desecrated like that. The American flag only flies at the end of the show.
I didn't think you cared.
I do care. I don't want the American flag flying behind me like it's a prop. All right. Yeah, I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. This was the most common regret of all. When people realize that their life is almost over and they look back clearly on it, it is easy to see how many dreams have gone unfulfilled. Most people had not honored even a half of their dreams and had to die knowing that it was due to choices they'd made or not made. Health brings a freedom very few realize until they no longer have it. How about that?
Well, I mean, they didn't want to be married.
Well, it's not about not wanting to be married. It was more like if you're going to be married and you're going to have children, the best way to live is to be true to yourself. You want to obviously support your family and you want to support your children, but you should support them at a job maybe that you're happier at, you know? I don't know. I mean, I'm not, you know, these people, like she said, there's a clarity of vision. Number two, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. That's the one that we mentioned. This came from every male patient that she nursed. Every single one that she nursed, every male patient said, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. Women also spoke of this regret, but as most were from an older generation, many of the female patients had not been breadwinners. All of the men I nursed deeply regretted spending so much of their lives on the treadmill of a work existence. Number three, I wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. Now, what does that mean? It means, she says, many people suppress their feelings in order to keep peace with others. As a result, they settled for a mediocre existence and never became who they were truly capable of becoming. That is, oh, man, you got to have the guts to people, you know, we were talking about this before the show. As humans, if we're honest with ourselves, we always make fun of people who are different. And the reason why we make fun of people who are different is because deep down we know they've got more guts than we do. They've got more guts. They are gutsy enough to go out and be who they really are and not conform necessarily. And the first thing that the human beings, being what we are, the first thing we do, because we're pack animals and we're comfortable in the pack, like Dan was saying in the break, we want everybody to be in the pack. We don't like anybody stepping out. And so it's hard for us to be who we are, expressing who we are, you know.
Yeah, but that's about feelings.
It's the same thing, man. It's the same thing. All right, we're going to be back here on a world-famous Phil Henry show. How many of these? Top five? Okay, we only got two more to go. So we'll be back with that and other items here on the agenda. The world-famous Phil Henry show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry show.
I'm going to tell you about it. Welcome back here. You know, last night we had a conversation, and it was about, what the hell was it about? Oh, yeah, it was about, in part, it was about John Edwards, and it was actually, most of it was about John Edwards, but in part, it was about the Mellon family. The Mellon family, M-E-L-L-O-N,
watermelon.
Yeah.
You know, you did that joke five times last night. Tonight, that makes six. The watermelon family is not funny any longer. It was.
What about the honeydew melon?
Neither one of you guys. Now you're pissing me off because it looks like you're trying to piss me off.
So you are pissed off.
Yeah, and I'm going to start swinging. You want that?
No, sir.
You?
No.
Then just knock off, okay?
The watermelon family.
Well, you laughed last night.
I laughed last night. That was last night when I laughed. Now I'm not laughing anymore at the watermelon family. It's the Andrew Mellon was the big granddaddy of them all. Andrew W. Mellon, who was an industrialist, this, that. You know who he was. He was the U.S. Secretary of Treasury. He was the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury. He was really an amazing guy in terms of what he invested his money in. He was very, very keen he was very smart the way he spread his money around. He seemed to know what the future of technology and industry would be in America. Made a lot of money. All right. So anyway, we find out that one of his, one of his progeny, one of his descendants, is a lady by the name of Bunny Mellon, Rachel Bunny Mellon. And Bunny was a big John Edwards fan, so we started talking about Bunny Mellon, and that's what got us to Andrew, you know, back to Andrew.
Now, the way you said that sounded like we started out with Andrew, went to her, and then went back. Sorry.
So anyway, make a long story short, I said, well, this guy, Andrew Mellon, he was a member of something called the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club, whose earthen dam failed in May of 1889 and caused the Johnstown Flood. Now, the Johnstown Flood is considered to be one of the greatest disasters in the history of this country. It killed over 2,000 people. I think there are only two events in American history where the loss of life was greater. One of them was 9/11, and the other was, some other natural disaster in the early part of the century. I don't think Pearl Harbor, actually, the number of dead at Pearl Harbor exceeds the Johnstown Flood. There was well over 2,000 killed, approaching maybe 3,000. But don't quote me on that. I could be wrong. But it was one of the biggest disasters. Basically, what happened was this. There had been a reservoir above this little town of Johnstown that was no longer in use. So it was taken over by a bunch of rich guys. And I'm not blaming the rich, but, you know, when you hear the story, it'll be kind of interesting. This was a reservoir that was no longer in use commercially, and so it was taken over by this South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club. If you look at a map of that area of Pennsylvania today, there is a town called South Fork. You see Johnstown. You also see a flood memorial. And you also see the stone bridge in Johnstown, which is where a catastrophe occurred, because the floodwaters backed up on this bridge. And in the floodwaters was a lot of debris. And the debris that started to back up at that stone bridge, which today you can see, it's right off of a highway that cuts through Johnstown, caught fire.
How come?
It was in some way flammable. And there might have been gases of some kind that were somehow released by some of this debris. But now they had a fire on top of the floodwaters.
Yeah, but why didn't the water put it out?
Because there was so much debris, the debris is burning on top of the water. And on top of that, if it's any kind of an oil-based fire, the oil and water not mixing, the water's not going to do anything to it. So it was horrible, and there were dead bodies everywhere in all of this debris, and now it's on fire. So it's just, you can well imagine people in the year 1889, what the hell is this, man? It wasn't the first flood they'd ever had. So these guys that were up at this hunting club took over this reservoir, and they said, well, you know, this would be a nice place for us to, you know, we could stock it with fish, this and that, this and that. It was an earthen dam. And that means it was made of earth. It wasn't concrete. It wasn't made of wood. There wasn't it wasn't wood reinforced by some sort of caulking or cement. It was earth. It also had some runoff pipes, but because it was no longer a commercially used dam, nobody thought to think that these runoff pipes were needed. They were in disrepair. And so for about 9 years, these very wealthy men who were members of this hunt and fish club, one of them being Andrew Mellon, use this reservoir, dammed up by earth, as a place to fish, as a place to relax, yada, yada, yada. But they had pretty torrential rains in that area, and every year somebody would say, well, you know.
Oh, so they knew that dam was going to give?
Well, you know, there was always some guy saying, you know, what are we going to do with this dam, man? You know, if the day ever comes, and so it wasn't a conversation that they hadn't had. Now comes the storm of 1889. It's the month of May, I believe. One of the members of the club who lived in a cottage right at the dam gets up in the morning and he sees that the floodwaters, the dam waters, are now cresting. And he says, we're in big trouble now. He calls out other members. One of the engineers that was a member and also worked on the dam was called out. And these guys worked for a good 6-7 hours trying to dig runoff, trying to repair these pipes, trying everything they could to release the pressure that was building on this earthen dam. They knew it was going to give.
They knew.
They knew enough about this thing, and it's a great example of how people say, well, why put off till, you know, that old saying. It's a kind of a turn of the phrase. Why do today what you can put off till tomorrow? We might as well get it done, because these guys knew there was something wrong with this. Now comes the day of reckoning, and man, there ain't no turning back, and they're trying to dig runoff. They're trying to get these pipes fixed. They're trying to do anything they can do. They were working their asses off, these guys, because they knew. They knew. If this thing breaks, man, we will never, there's going to be hell to pay. And sure enough, they recognize there's nothing more we can do. They retired to high ground.
Why don't they keep on working?
There wasn't anything more they could do. The dam was going to give way. They left. They went to high ground. And sure enough, boom. And I think it was sometime in the early afternoon, this dam gave way and began this sort of torturous journey down this valley, taking out little villages, taking out homes, killing people, taking out, in one instance, it almost took out a railroad train. There was a guy sitting in a locomotive who threw it into reverse, if you're ready for this. He tied down the steam whistle and threw the thing into reverse, basically warning everybody behind him with this whistle,
Your whistling's going fast.
He's going as fast as his ass can go in this steam locomotive backwards down this rail line with a whistle going like bloody hell, telling people to get the hell out of the way. And eventually the water's caught up to his locomotive, lifting this thing off the tracks. The man lived, I think his name was John Hess was his name. He was the engineer. He did live, and lived to tell about it, and it was a very courageous thing to do, trying to warn people. But the waters eventually hit Johnstown, slammed into this stone bridge where they caught fire, all of this debris caught fire, and it was brutal, man. There was, like I said, close to 3,000 people dead. It was years before they had this thing all cleaned up, but here's the thing about that dam. As the result of that dam breaking, the lawsuits commenced, and it became a part of liability law from that day forward. And you can look this up, that you could sue an entity as opposed to individuals. You could sue the entity, and they did. They wound up suing the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club, saying they had the liability here. They caused this by not maintaining that dam, by not, doing whatever due diligence they should have been doing to maintain the integrity of that dam. It burst, and they sued the club in total, which means they were able to sue all the members.
But up to that time, they had to sue one guy?
Yeah, because up to that time, you would find one guy. Who's the guy that's responsible here? Well, I don't know. We're all members of the same club. Well, I got to find one guy to sue. Well, then they just boom, man. And that became if you'll pardon the expression, a watershed event in American legal history. World famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
That's great history, Mr. Hendry.
Thank you.
Phil Hendry Show 877-876-PHIL
877-876-7445. We're going to bring on a guest that we have on from time to time, but we never really talk with him about the actual area of expertise that he is employed in as a professor, as well as a astronomer at the Mountain Meadow Observatory in Colorado. That is Dr. Ron Tarner, who also does teaching at the University of Denver, and joins us tonight to talk about this story that is really interesting, and you have a completely unique view of this thing, and that is the mining of asteroids by all of these millionaires, the Google brass, and I think Ross Perot is involved in this. Do you know the story well? What do you think?
Well, Phil, first of all, thank you. It's always great to be on with you.
Good to have you, Ron. We haven't had you on in a while.
Well, first of all, I think you may be interested in my read on this. This is...
let me just interrupt you for a minute.
Sure.
Let me tell people, give people some background here.
That's important. I know that Larry Page is involved and Eric Schmidt.
Right. Google CEO and chairman, his CEO Larry Page, chairman Eric Schmidt, are among the backers of a venture to mine asteroids for trillions of dollars of precious metals as Earth's resources become strained. Seattle's Planetary Resources aims to launch a telescopic space surveyor into Earth's low orbit in less than 2 years to identify potential metal and water-rich asteroids and then begin prospecting within 4 years, according to co-founder Eric Anderson in a telephone interview. The venture, which would be the first effort to mine the solar system commercially, has the backing of billionaire Ross Perot, Google board member Kavitark Sharam.
It's Kavitark Ram Shararam, as well as Charles Simonyi and Page and Schmidt. So it's obviously a very moneyed group of men. But here's what I find deeply, deeply disturbing. And it's, if you know, not only is it disturbing, Phil, but it's you want to sort of involve yourself in this effort to make sure that you're not being taken advantage of.
What do you mean?
Well, these men have said they want to mine asteroids for precious metals. Precious metals. Those precious metals would be obviously gold. Obviously, they would in some instances involve silver. Obviously, copper. Any metal that fetches, when you say precious, you're talking about a metal that is in rare supply. Is a low supply, is a rarely occurring metal on Earth. That's why gold is so valuable, because it rarely occurs here on Earth. So what they're saying is they want to corner the market on rare metals, and we here on Earth sit and applaud them as if they're doing something for the human race. I think it's very. If I wasn't so insulted, I would applaud them myself.
So you are saying that these men, Larry Page, Ross Perot,
all of them, are engaged in a self-enriching project that they've gotten a whole bunch of attention for. There's nothing in this news announcement that says, well, once they begin mining these asteroids for precious metals, what are they going to do, turn them over to the banks of America? This obviously would be the beginning of cornering the market of these kind of asteroid metals, these precious metals that are mined on asteroids or planetoids. That certainly would seem much more feasible to buy them on a planetoid than on an asteroid.
And but you say asteroid.
I didn't say asteroid. I said, who is that?
Bud Dickman, let me ask the questions, Bud. Asteroids, right?
Yes, I said asteroid.
I'm sorry, so this is Robert Leonard?
Yes, sir.
It sounded like when you said asteroid, he thought you were talking about a hemorrhoid.
No, I'm not talking about hemorrhoids. Is he listening to what I'm saying?
Well, you said asteroid.
I did not say asteroid.
Right, would you guys just let me ask the questions? He said asteroid, okay? So, that's a very interesting take.
Oh, yeah. I haven't heard anybody say anything about it.
So, in other words, the partnership of these men that would see asteroids mined for their precious metals is just simply a project to corner a certain precious metal market by these guys, and they're getting all this publicity, but what's the benefit to the human race?
Well, I think that it's a fair question. Before anyone gets too excited and we start blanking each other's blanks, as the wolf said in Pulp Fiction, if you remember the wolf saying that, Phil?
Yes, I remember the wolf saying what you said.
All right, let's not start blanking each other's blanks just yet.
No, he said, let's not start.
Let me talk to the guy. I don't need you saying it.
Yeah, well, that's what he's going to, but I say blank.
Right.
So before we start blanking each other's blanks, let's take a look at this and recognize it for what it is. And that is these men biting these planetoids or these asteroids or what have you for the precious metal.
All right, now, ripping up the Earth's... And maybe this is what you mean when you say that there's a little bit of a con job going on here, because they immediately begin talking about the Earth's environment.
Well, exactly. You started the phrase there, Phil. Ripping up the Earth's crust not only is terribly intrusive from an environmental point of view, but it's actually really expensive and really hard. So this man, Anderson... Eric Anderson, who's the co-founder of this project, is talking, oh, it's intrusive. He doesn't care. He's using that as an excuse so that if they need funding or anything that they may need to go into outer space and buy these asteroids, they'll get, because they look like they're being philanthropic.
What do you think?
In
the sense of, first of all, is it possible?
Well, anything is possible, as we like to say in science. What we are seeing are more and more private interests learning from the experience of NASA and learning from the experience of the Russians and the Japanese and the British and any other country that has ventured into space. We find that now commercial interests, private interests, are learning the lessons very well. Recognize and understand the construction of vehicles that would be, that would go into Earth orbit, and how to construct it, obviously, efficiently design and put into use a vehicle such as that. Also, what it takes to stay alive in space. What we don't know is how to mine asteroids. And this is where I think you will see, unless they are careful, you're going to see an accident, the likes of which would make the most horrible thing you saw in Armageddon, Deep Impact, or 2001 seem like child's play. And
good Lord.
That's what I would expect. And
you're saying if these guys attempt to, because it hasn't been done before.
Well, there's never been any attempt to bind anything in space. And these men are going to go up there, big heroes, you know, as they like to say, and it will be something what was the name of that movie? The guy came back and his skin changed, and I'm not saying that that'll happen.
Quartermass?
Yes, the Quartermass experiment.
What do you mean?
What do I mean? You want me to spell it out? You get guys that are fooling around in space, and one of them comes back and his hand has turned into a tree trunk.
What's he talking about?
Oh, get out of it. What, Doc, come on.
No, what do you mean, Doc, come on?
Well, what are you talking about, man? These guys go into outer space like anybody else.
Oh, yeah, like anybody else. No one has mined...
All right, nobody has mined an asteroid before. I understand that. No one's mined a planetoid. No one has gone to the moon and done any of that. This would be the first, when you talk about what's the first. But all of a sudden, you have these guys mutating into trees? I mean...
I didn't say tree. I said his arm looked like a tree trunk. What he eventually became was far more horrifying. You know,
Okay, so what are we doing? Are we joking around with science fiction?
No, we're not joking around with that. What I'm trying to tell you is, when you take private citizens and they monkey around in space, horrible things occur. Horrible. And I mean horrible. And
okay, what is our experience with that?
What is our experience with what?
What is our experience with private citizens going into space and, quote-unquote, monkeying around in space?
I just got the Quartermass. All right, it was a movie.
Yeah, it was a movie. Give me something real.
Well,
can't really find anything real, but I mean, a Quartermass come close.
Well, what, are you guys high on something tonight? Or what do you mean the Quartermass? That's a movie.
Well, I mean, what I was saying was, all right, What about 20 million miles from Earth? Like, okay, that was a movie.
Yeah, that was a movie, 20 million miles from Earth. I want something real, something that has happened, something in our experience as a human animal, that private citizens have gone into space and returned having mutated into trees. There is nothing, okay? So you're worried about something that is strictly science fiction.
Well, Phil, let me tell you something. You just got done talking about that dam giving way. If someone had worried about that, there'd be about 3,000 people alive today. Well, they wouldn't be alive today. They would have been alive then, okay?
They'd be alive then. They'd be dead now.
I know they'd be dead now. But they, if
there would have been 3,000 lives saved, put it that way.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
All right, I'll put it that way. There would have been 3,000 lives saved if someone had taken care to predict certain things. I've tried to tell you and your listeners that we have an opportunity. If we send private citizens into space and they come back gibbering like animals, like mindless things, I want us to think of everything very clearly. That's all.
Well, you've got an imagination on you, man. You know.
You know what? I can only echo what David G. Hall said. Okay, man.
You know what? I'll talk any way I want. Compared to you, I sound like the most normal guy on Earth.
What does that mean?
What it means is, you're talking about mutations in space. You're talking about 20 million miles from Earth. You're talking about the quarter mass experiment. You're talking about all of this jazz that hasn't ever happened, that probably won't ever happen, and you're saying it will, it's possible, because you have civilians, quote, monkeying around in space, drilling planetoids, and this and that.
Drilling who?
Yeah, what did you say, drilling who?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Drilling planetoids! Put them on hold. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Did you put him on hold?
Yeah.
I don't want to hear him popping up again, okay?
No, he's on hold.
World-famous Phil Henry Show.
What do you mean about planetoids?
So you lied to me.
No, I'm just kidding.
You lied to me. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show. Please
Truth
don't hurt me.
Is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
What do you mean about planetoid? Just seriously.
This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Yes, David.
Are you back?
Yeah, I'm back. What?
I'm sorry to keep bothering you, Phil. Dr. Turner just called me, said you hung up on him, too.
Yeah, I did.
So that's, I don't know how many guests, six guests, you've hung up on five.
That's right.
Why'd you hang up on this guy?
Oh, because he was talking about humans coming back from space travel, having morphed into blobs and, you know, space creatures. Because he was talking about the Google effort to mine asteroids, and he said that civilians that go up there and try mining or doing anything in outer space run the risk of coming back as mutated things, okay? So, in other words, the guy's just given me the plot line of every 1950s sci-fi, and I just said goodbye.
Well, do you know this guy to be nuts?
I don't know him to be nuts.
What is he?
He's a little extreme. He's a very eccentric guy. He's got a problem with Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, this is the guy that thinks Stephen Hawking's a racist.
Oh, this is the guy that thinks Hawking is does all those Polish jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a problem with Stephen Hawking. His problem with Stephen Hawking isn't so much that he claims Stephen Hawking does Polish jokes and he just does racist. He says that Hawking, excuse me, is always looking to score chicks.
Yeah.
All right, I mean, nothing wrong with that if that's the truth, but this cat's obsessed.
So this guy's obsessed with how often Hawking gets laid? You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, that guy getting obsessed about a guy, like, guy's all a human pretzel.
He's worried about how the human pretzel gets laid, huh? Well,
what do you mean the human? Let's have a little respect, okay?
Oh, okay. Sorry, sister. Sorry, Mother Cabrini. You know?
Well, I mean, you called me up. All right.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about this guy. What's his name? Turner called me up.
So you're on his side.
I didn't say I was on his side.
But you're just referring to Stephen Hawking as the human pretzel.
When did you all of a sudden become a Hawking fan?
I'm a fan of his the way a lot of people are. The man's a brilliant man. He's gone through a lot. I do not begrudge him anything. And I don't see what this has got to do with Ron Turner, who is on my show tonight.
Yeah, talking about how we morph into some kind of a thing.
Right. Now, you can say what you want about Stephen Hawking, but when he publishes a paper or talks about science or is involved in any discussion having to do with human spirit, you know, this guy is talking about stuff that I, you know, we can understand, you know, from the planet Earth.
And this guy Turner's talking about...
Yeah, the blob and like that.
All right, I'll let him down easy. I got him on hold on the other line. He's very angry. And
well, I don't give a damn, you know.
All right, do you want this guy back on your show?
Here's what I want. Every time I got a guest that gets upset, do you need to call me on the air about it?
Well, excuse me.
Yeah, you know.
God.
Excuse me.
Well, you know.
Wow, I mean, all he's doing is trying to help.
Bud, why don't you shut up, you rear... licking his rear end.
God, I mean, all I was trying to do... And what do you mean, licking my rear end?
Yeah, it says I'm a rear licker.
You are.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
Well, I mean, I just called it up. I just wanted to know what's...
You've called me three times tonight. Talking to, hey, why'd you hang up on this person? Why'd you hang up on that person?
Well, why have him on the show if you're going to hang up on him?
Because I like it. It feels good. Okay?
Sure. You know, Phil, you call this guy Turner nuts. You sound like you know, you're not the brightest crayon in the box either. So
you know what? You know all about me, the brightest crayon in the box. You know what's wrong with me and what's right with me, so...
Yeah, that's what worries me. Now go ahead, hang up on me.
Oh, okay. Goodbye.
Wait a minute, I was only...
You did hang up on him!
He asked me to. And since I've been doing it so much tonight, since I have been, pissing him off tonight with all of the hang-ups... All right. Thank you, David Hall. Sorry about that, sir. Dr. Turner. And, good luck to you, man. Whew. Unreal.
Then I'll buy those precious metals.
Yeah, I had. Thank you, Robert, for reminding me. The precious metals that they're talking about are not only gold and silver, but what they say is the following. What would-be space miners would do is, after surveying and identifying precious metal deposits such as platinum in near-Earth asteroids, phase three of the company's plan is resource extraction, for which it will develop robotic technology.
Well, Tony, they're not going to have a guy do it.
No, they're not going to have a guy do it. No. So we won't see... maybe we will see the... remember that ship in Alien?
Yeah, Alien?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about it?
That was a mining ship.
It was?
Yeah. The ship in Alien, remember they were coming back with I don't know how many tons of ore that they'd gotten off a planet? And they were coming back with this ore.
So so they probably had a robot.
Well, they must have done some kind of robotics or something, because there was only a crew of, unless the miners are back on the planet, so I don't know. But
yeah, but that Star Trek that one time, where the guy, he's a miner too.
Yeah, but they were using those creatures, the Ordas. You remember them?
Oh, yeah, they looked like a rock.
Yeah, they looked like rocks, but they were living creatures. And they bored through the rock. They would eat this, I think they were silicone creatures. I don't know anything, so...
Yeah, why'd you bring that up?
Because you guys are asking me about whether they're going to have miners or robots. They're using robots.
Yeah, but they said they're going to use robots.
Every day I get closer, bud. Every day I get closer.
To what?
To belting you. Every day I draw a little bit closer. Nearer to thee, Lord. Nearer to thee.
Cut it out.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Phil Hendry and Dan Northcraft. Join us online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com for a live streaming video of our show, as well as all of our wonderful archives, our daily podcast, our classic Phil podcasts, and of course, don't forget our souvenir shop, which is just chock full of all of that groovy Phil Hendry stuff. All right? Catch you guys tonight. Until then, let that be a lesson to you. It's good luck now. I like it.
Phil Hendry.